When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into episode 223 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network. The Sources Say podcast is, as always, presented by our good friends at Justice Dental. You can make an appointment at one of two Lexington locations. That's on Wellington Way and Blazer Parkway. Now is a great time to schedule your dental cleaning. Remember that regular dental appointments are important for your overall health. You can learn more and make an appointment at justicedental.com. Dr. Justice and Dr. Thompson look forward to seeing you soon. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again by Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
I'm fantastic, Jack Pilgrim. How are you?
Oh, I am just peachy on this Sunday evening, a post-game edition of the Sources Say podcast. Haven't gotten to do many of these this year due to scheduling conflicts and travel and all of the logistical issues that come with a normal Kentucky basketball season. So it feels good to finally get a fresh thoughts post-game show like we did quite a bit last season, and really want to get into that groove, obviously. Going to SEC play and all that good stuff. But a big one, a huge one for Kentucky, Sean. Kentucky finally gets that big game monkey off its back after two different chances against Michigan State in the Champions Classic. And then at Gonzaga, Kentucky finally gets the job done over the pond or across the pond, defeats Michigan by a final score 73-69. What were your initial takeaways of the win?
Well, yeah, you're talking about post-game episodes. This is probably should be one of the most enjoyable ones that we've had this year, because it's the first time that Kentucky's actually beaten somebody that we can put a name to and
that matters
and yes, feel good about it, and a team that, you know, has some talent. And now I think the takeaways, obviously, there's still a lot of stuff that this team has to clean up before I think that we can really pencil them in as one of those final weekend of the NCAA tournament teams. I mean, there's a lot of issues that they still got to clean up, but they made plays when they had to. They had guys make shots when they needed to. You saw Cason Wallace emerge, especially in the second half, early to give Kentucky its lead. And then when they needed a big shot late, he was a guy that delivered as well. But I think the biggest thing is, like you said in the opening, you got the monkey off your back. You beat a quality opponent, something that you can at least now attach to your resume. Had they lost that one, you're running out of opportunities. This is a team that was going to be going into SEC play at the end of this month and into January with maybe a win against UCLA, depending on how that game goes. It could have been one of those situations where you didn't want to start saying, well, this might not be a tournament team. But had they gone 0-3 in those quality opportunities, you start bringing in the possibility of that talk if you miss out on resume builders.
Yeah, and I said on a couple of different platforms that this was a must-win for Kentucky. And I know some Kentucky fans kind of took that and kind of scoffed at it. Like, we're eight games into the year. There's no such thing as a must-win this early. But it's a must-win in terms of if you want this team to be the team that we kind of wanted, we're expecting it and kind of demanding it to be going into the year. Like, I know there are some fans that are just kind of in this fantasy land. Everything's going to work out just fine. But this is a very crucial season for Coach Cal. This is a very crucial season for the program to get back to that last, to at least shoot past the first weekend at minimum in the NCAA tournament. This is a massive, massive opportunity with all of the pieces. I don't care how the season unfolds. I don't care if it's an opening night, opening weekend loss again in the tournament. This team has the pieces to win it all. And I'll go talk till I'm blue in the face, trying to express that. They have all the pieces. They have you know, the opportunities, but it's about executing when it matters most. And that was what's so frustrating out in Washington against Gonzaga. Well, and then in the Champions Classic, you needed this one.
You did. And like when I was saying, you start bringing in the conversation of, you know, is this team going to be in danger of missing the NCAA tournament? Like it wouldn't have, we wouldn't have had that talk had they lost this one. But go back to those years that they did miss the NCAA tournament, and what did December look like?
Exactly.
There was nothing on the resume. So, like, they were starting to get to a point. And, I mean, this isn't a win that you're sitting there and you're feeling like an instant Final Four contender, but it's a win against a quality opponent, an opponent that makes runs in the NCAA tournament, has a really, really good player. And I think it's a start. It's something that you can now kind of look at, come back home, build on, that's not beating South Carolina State or Bellarmine or someone like that. No, you know, not discrediting any of those programs, but Kentucky had 5 wins going into this one, and we didn't feel good about any of them because what did it do to your resume? Absolutely nothing. This is one that you can finally chalk up and at least use to your advantage on Selection Sunday, and now you hope to go get another one here in a couple of weeks, and then you get into SEC play, and that's where they'll have the quad one opportunities and stuff start to pile up. But this was a step in the right direction. There's still a ton of stuff that we got to talk about that this team has to be better at and get better at, but they found a way to win a close game, one that they lost a couple of weeks ago when the game got tight in Indy, and then they weren't competitive in Spokane against Gonzaga. So I thought it was a step in the right direction to at least see them emerge victorious when Michigan made a couple of runs at them late. That game could have swung the other way when Kaysen got stripped in the layup, and then Toppin misses a jumper. It's down to 4. Now it's down to 2, but they found a way to win. I think that's the biggest takeaway.
And I think I completely agree. That's kind of I wrote that in my takeaways post after the game, that it was kind of all of the demons that Kentucky has had throughout this season. You know, they got down a little bit early, got down as much as 6 in the first half. You know, they could have used that opportunity to let go of the rope. They got up by as many as 8 in the second half to start the second half. You let go of that and let them get back up by 1. A lot of times Kentucky would let go of the rope in that situation. You get back up by 8, and then it slips back down to 2. A lot of ebbs and flows, a lot of swings back and forth, pendulum swings, that Kentucky had all of the chances in the world to screw it up. You know, the missed free throws, the, you know, all the different chances that they had that it could have gone the other direction, but they held firm. The things that screwed them up and cost them in Indianapolis against Michigan State, they were able to execute on both ends. Even defensively, they were able to execute on both ends to solidify this win. So, you know, it's not pretty. It wasn't the most gorgeous thing we've ever seen. Kentucky did do a very nice job offensively, shooting the ball very well, 46.6% from the field, 60% from 3, although 10 of 20 at the free throw line is not acceptable, but defensively did a lot of really good things. But overall, just something nice to hang on to, a crucial victory in that regard. Sean, in particular, I thought Kaysen Wallace, you mentioned earlier, his big shot there with a minute 11 to go, absolute dagger there to put it up 5 and essentially put it out of reach for Kentucky and seal the victory. Xavier Wheeler made some big plays there midway through the so basically to start the second half, Kaysen put Kentucky up 8 by himself, went on an 8-1 run by himself, and then Xavier a little bit later, with Kentucky up 2, went on a 6-0 run by himself and put Kentucky back up 8. So second half really sparked by Kentucky's duo of guards. They both put up really impressive numbers. Kaysen Wallace finishes with a team high 14 points, 5 of 8 shooting, 4 for 4 from 3, 8 rebounds, 4 offensive, Sean, which is absolutely unbelievable. 5 assists, 1 block, 1 steal, and just 2 turnovers in 36 minutes. It's about as good a performance as you can ask for. And then Xavier Wheeler, 11 points, 4 of 10 shooting, 1 for 2 from 3, 7 assists, 3 rebounds, 1 steal, and 3 turnovers in 37 minutes.
Yeah, the Cal definitely played those two a ton of minutes. Xavier 37, Kaysen 36, and then Oscar, I believe, was next with 31 minutes. So you kind of see how I think this is going to go this year, that those two dudes are going to be the guys in the backcourt there playing a lot together. And Kaysen provided the burst there early in the second half that I think ultimately was the separation that Kentucky needed that eventually won the game, was that start to the second half. Like you fight and you fight and you fight. You mentioned that they got down 6 there early. I believe it was 17 to 11 midway through the first half, and a lot of stuff not going in their favor. They battled back, got a one-point lead going to the half, and then the great start to the second half, him hitting big shots, the runner late in the clock, the couple of threes there, the 8-0 run of his own. I thought that was a big deal for the freshman, and then an even bigger deal to be able to come back. He got quiet there for a stretch offensively, then closed it out with the big three late. But I want to talk a little bit about Sabir, and I tweeted about it, and I didn't want people to think that I'm like crushing Sabir. Like, I don't blame any of the things. A lot of the stuff that Sabir does offensively down the stretch, I don't blame on him. I kind of lay it at the fact that Kentucky gets so stagnant that I think a lot of guys look at Sabir and say, I don't want this, you go get it. And then he's having to drive downhill and kind of just throw it up on the glass and try to make a play. And I think it gets Kentucky in trouble the last couple of years. What I was saying is you got to give him credit for hitting some of the shots and some of the plays that he made. I just don't think that's the recipe to get where you want to go. I think that that's going to lead to a frustrating spring again and us on this platform questioning what in the hell's going on. And I don't want to do that again. Like, I don't want to relive anything like last year. You give him credit for the plays that he made. He had to make those today. I just don't think it's setting him up to be successful long term, and I don't think it's setting this team up to be successful long term. Now, is he going to have to do that from time? Yeah, things happen.
Of course.
But it feels like every time late in games when it gets stagnant and they're trying to grind it out, it ends up with him trying to snake his way downhill into a bunch of traffic. And that, I just don't feel like that's what Kentucky needs to be doing late in games. And I think a lot of that is their identity right now. I still think they're trying to figure out what they want to do and how they want to do it. But we also thought that they established an identity last year, and it still led to that being what it was late in games, in close games.
And I think that's where some of the frustration comes from, I guess, on my end, when you do bring up a criticism like that and you do go, you know, that's not a recipe for success. And or you bring up the idea that Cason Wallace might be the guy that you kind of hand the keys over to as the season progresses, as that initiator, not with 3 seconds left on the shot clock, somebody that you kind of say, let's start to get this thing rolling, 17 seconds left in the shot clock, whatever it may be. I do see an argument for that, but shoot, I would see an argument for Sabir being that guy if you get things rolling earlier and put those guys in better positions to set up shots on the outside. But yeah, to force him to create for himself and set up a
Sabir needs to be the starter, not the finisher.
Yeah,
in my opinion, when it comes to late clock situations, like I said, you're going to have situations where the ball's going to get stuck in his hands at times, and he's going to have to go make a play late in the clock. But it feels like that they get into that situation a lot more often than what they should. Mm-hmm. And it feels like it's always at like key moments of the game. Late first half, he made a play like that. And then late second half, made a play like that. I do think that that's going to be Cason. And I do prefer Cason over in that role just because of his size. He can rise over top of somebody and score. Sabir, I still like him. I still think he brings a lot to this team when he's at his best. And it worked out today. But how many times have we seen that not work out? And that's why you can't get false hope that that's going to be the way it's going to go every time. Like, he's not going to bell him out and throw up a prayer late in the clock and hit a three. And I guess the other side of this, too, is there were a couple of out-of-bounds sets where there were 4 seconds or less on the shot clock or on the clock. And the ball was going into Sabir. One time he drove from right wing left and got to the free throw line there in the second half. And then there was another one. I can't remember how it unfolded, but I'm thinking, you know, is that the option that you want to be throwing it to? Because that's putting him in a spot to where he's having to chuck up a shot that's not his part of his game, but Kentucky keeps giving him the ball in those situations. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that that's the game plan. But you don't want him as the trigger man because he's smaller and they can kind of suffocate him there throwing the ball inbounds. I don't know. I just feel like that a lot of times it's kind of they look at him and like, just go do something, go make a play, get downhill and do something. And I just don't think that that's going to be, I don't think that's going to get Kentucky where they want to go, Jack. I don't.
More often you're going to see the drive to the rim, kind of throw it up over his shoulder, barely touch rim at the end of the shot clock that we saw there in the second half where we went, what are you doing? Yep. Why are we doing this? Then you're going to get the heave from 23 feet at the top of the key, and then the kind of fade away from the right elbow, which admittedly looked fantastic. The spin move into the right elbow jumper, it looked great in slow motion and on replay. At the moment, I was like, "What are you doing, dude?" It ended up looking a lot better second time around, but still, it's not setting him up for success.
And I got it. Like I said, you got to tip your hat to him because he did make plays today. I don't think they win that game without him making plays down the stretch. But had those not gone in, we're having an entirely different conversation right now about this basketball team. So him making those shots to me doesn't change anything about what I think Kentucky needs to do late in games and late in clock. Yeah. It's not like now that he's did that or done that, that I'm going to say, okay, let's run everything through Xavier late.
Yeah.
Like that. No, like even if he does it the next game, I'm still not going to say, let's run everything through Xavier late, because I just don't think that that's setting them up. I don't think it's setting him up, but the biggest thing today is they got a win. He made plays. Now you figured out to where you don't have to put dudes in situations where they're not going to thrive and succeed long term. He bailed them out today a couple of times. Now he did make mistakes, but I don't care. He still bailed them out with some big shots.
Also hitting a big shot, Cason Wallace. I love his quote after the game. It was just – he basically said it just came down to coaching and that he would have been a selfish teammate had he not done that, Sean. I guess they've been practicing inside-out threes in practice. You know, if a big gets it out to you onto the perimeter out of a double team or whatever. So Jacob Toppin sailed it to the top of the key to Xavier, and Xavier kicked it to the left wing for Cason from 22-ish feet at the left wing with 1:11 to go, knocked it down. His quote afterwards said, "We've been stressing inside out threes in practice. We get to the paint, kick it out, and you've got to shoot it if you're open." It was one of those moments where it was inside out and I had to shoot it, because if I don't, I would have been a selfish teammate. So I shot it and it went in. That dude is as even keeled. That's what I love about him. He doesn't have too many highs, too many lows. He stays as level headed as you possibly can. And those are the guys that you want taking big shots at the end of the games, because the moment's not too big for him. Although it is very strange to me how at the free throw line that changes, but in the game, like when the whistle is blown and the game is live, the dude is cold blooded. He has ice in his veins. But then, for whatever reason, at the free throw line, it completely changes.
Yeah, and that's got to change. It's not just for him, but you know, for Wheeler as well. Like it's got those guys got to be able to hit free throws late. I know CJ missed one there, the front end of a 1-on-1. I think in the first half, like Kentucky's backcourt has to make free throws, especially if those two are going to play the amount of minutes and the number of minutes that they're playing. So I think we saw today that when it comes down to close games, it's going to be Wheeler, it's going to be Wallace. And they're going to play north of 32, 33 minutes every time it's a close game. Like today, to me, kind of felt like one of those second round NCAA tournament games, mm-hmm. where you're having to grind one out late against a team that I do think you're more talented than, but the other team's playing well. Maybe you're not playing your best. And it's kind of one of those wins that you that the national championship teams kind of survive and advanced on. That's what today felt like to me. I don't know if you got that same vibe or not, but it kind of was it was the first time I really truly felt like it's basketball season with Kentucky, because the other games it was kind of like we got to talk about this or this went wrong. But today some things went wrong, but some things went right. Guys stepped up and made plays. You saw guys emerge. I do want to talk as we go through here about Ugonna Kingsley or Onyenso. I think that his role to me should be established and submitted now as the guy behind Oscar.
And Cal actually said that tonight. For the first time, he picked one or the other over Lance Wary. He said he's the guy. And I think that is substantial for this team. And again, Lance Wary plays his role to perfection. I love what he brings to the table. He's the enforcer, enforcer role. He's going to give you the tough plays and grab you a tough rebound, maybe make a nice pass here or there. Like, I mean, he'll get you a stop. He plays his part very, very well. But his ceiling is so much lower than what Ugo's is because of the shot blocking that he provides. And We saw that. I mean, he swatted that one. I mean, just ricocheted off the backboard. And that was kind of, you know, one of those game changing type plays. He had another block. He had the cleanup when Kentucky just couldn't get a bucket to fall. Had like three or four offensive rebounds in a row. He got the cleanup bucket to fall. Hit those two big free throws. And Cal, something that really caught my eye was Cal scorer's table, clapping him on and cheering him and kind of waving him on like, yes, that's what we need from you. He hits both of those free throws back to back in an injury situation when Xavier went down. That's how you work your way on the floor. You make those, you capitalize in those moments.
And it's a situation where Juwan Howard picked him to be the free throw shooter, right? And I think that's why Cal was like, okay, you know, you just pretty much got dared to make these.
Yeah.
And you made them. And I thought that was a big momentum thing for him, a confidence boosting thing. And I know that, I mean, look, Dickinson went right at him, and that's a tough matchup for anyone in college basketball. And he got into Ugo's chest a couple of times and went through the shot blocker and made some plays at the rim. But listen, that is a huge thing for a guy that is still trying to find his way in college basketball, just to get those minutes against that matchup in that moment. You're not looking for him to be at his best right now. That's a huge thing that's going to step and build in January, February, and into the NCAA tournament. The one thing that I did disagree with late is I didn't understand why Cal went to Lance so late in the game. He had no flow, no rhythm at all in this game. And then you go to him in one of the most critical moments of the game. I didn't see the point in that. And well, other than maybe
against Hunter Dickinson, who had been destroying the entire second half,
you go in and put him against the best player on the floor and that's where I'm coming from. Like, to me, that was a trust thing, that he trusted Lance because of knowing Lance for 3 years, coaching Lance for 3 years. But if it's the trust thing, why didn't you go there the first half? Because you'd already seen that Ugo could hold his thing, or, you know, hold his ground there and at least make some plays and have his length. So I thought that was probably the most questionable decision that I thought of late in the game, but it didn't cost them. Kentucky won the game. Not saying anything against Lance. I just don't think that, like I'm talking about them putting Wheeler in situations, I don't think that put Lance in a situation to be successful. I mean, like you said, he had no feel of guarding that matchup whatsoever, and you put him in and he just gets destroyed.
Yeah, that was one that I definitely shook my head quite a bit at. I was like, well, I maybe you live and you learn. There's a reason that he only played 2 minutes, and then Oscar came right back in, and that was the end of that. But, another guy I want to make sure that we address, Jacob Toppin. I thought he did a lot of really good. He actually won the stupid most important impactful player belt or whatever the new shtick thing that Cal's going for with that. He won the belt after what I thought was a really, really poor first half performance. He scores two of the first four buckets, I believe, and then kind of disappears the rest of the way, then gets his second foul with 7 minutes to go, and then just sits out the rest of the half. He comes back in, absolutely nothing on the box score for like the first 10 minutes of the half, and then maybe 8 minutes, 9 minutes, something like that. And then he kind of goes on a little run on his own where he tries to kind of force that 17, 16 footer again over and over and over again. And that's kind of where my frustration started boiling up. It was like, all right, buddy, that's clearly not working. Why are you, you're going to shoot Kentucky out of this game. And then admittedly, he made the fourth one. And then he caught a lob on the left side, and then he had that kind of up and under finish, I think, for the and one. And yeah, I thought he played really, really well, made some clutch free throws there at the very end of the game. But that's kind of what you expect out of him. He needs to be a guy that you don't want him floating on the perimeter. You don't want him just jacking up mid-range jumpers just for the sake of doing it. That's not where he's at his best. He's at his best when he's attacking and using his size and his length and his athleticism to his advantage. It was kind of one of my biggest gripes after the Bellarmine game. I just didn't think that that he used that until late. And he was like, oh, the guys I'm going up against are 6'5" and I have no vertical. Why aren't I capitalizing on this? And then he finally did for that brief stretch. I want to see that for a full game. I don't want to, you know, I want to see him hit those mid-range shots and even take a three or two every once in a while in the momentum of the game. But you don't need to isolate him and create plays out of, you know, the high post, however they set it up for him to, you know, set that up and have that be Kentucky's offense. That's just not what puts him in the best position to succeed. And that's definitely not what puts the team in the best position to succeed. We saw his best in the second half.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by that position as we move throughout the rest of December and into league play, because for a brief moment today, and I'm talking very brief, we saw Chris Livingston at the four.
Like, it was short, 30 seconds.
It was short lived. And then you get, you know, your comments about it and stuff and playing him at the four. And you're like, okay, is this something that we're going to see here in the next few games? Are we going to see more of Livingston at the four, you know, spelling top in there? I'm interested to see what happens with that. Chris played what, 7 minutes, I believe, today?
Seven minutes.
Yep. So, like, you're going to need that to go up when you get into league play, and then you're kind of trying to figure out where Kentucky's going at that spot behind Toppin. Is it Damian? Is it Chris? Is it – I mean, I don't really know exactly what Kentucky's doing there at that
is
spot.
Is Damian a four? Is it
There's so many guys that I have question marks about right now, and I don't know. And that's – I have the same question about that one. I don't know about that. I don't know – with what they're doing with Chris, does it need to be? I mean, I've always felt like, and I know you and I've always talked about it, small ball four with Chris Livingston.
Yeah.
And I just think that's the transition that needs to be made in the coming weeks, is don't stick him at the three. Play him in that small ball four role, because right now, whatever you're doing at the three, it's not doing any good for anyone.
It's not setting up any shots for him. He's in that weird middle ground where you don't utilize either of his gifts. Like, you don't.
You're putting him in a spot to be a.
He's in no man's land.
Yeah, yeah. It's not putting him in, like, you. To me, you stick him at the four, and you get him some matchups where I think he's going to be quicker than some guys he's going to play against, and I think he can get some opportunities and win some one-on-ones and do some things and kind of move around in different spots on the floor, but especially in transition and running the floor.
Yeah.
But right now there's that, those are, and I shouldn't say question marks. I think it's question mark is all of it's looped together. Who is Damian? What is Damian? What do they need from Damian? What is his best role? What is Chris Livingston's best role? Is Jacob Toppin that much better than what Chris would be as the small ball four? Does that make, like, because I just don't know yet. Like, at one point I thought Jacob Toppin was clear cut the best option, but right now I'm still, there's moments in games where he disappears, like you said. Now, he did have a big second half and a big stretch there. I just think Kentucky has to get better at the four overall. And we talked about that being kind of an upgrade going into this year, that we thought that spot was going to collectively be deeper and better. To this point, it really hasn't been.
And what I'm concerned about is Chris Livingston losing his spirit with all of this and, you know, tuning out the city. You lose yourself within the game by playing in the game, but you also lose yourself by not playing in the game. And you don't have that same engagement. You don't have the same. And that's where you go. You enter the game, the old Dante Allen. Then you enter the game, and that's where the defensive miscues come from and the misrotations and the assignments, and kind of turn around and go, oh, where the hell did my man go? That's where you kind of lose that engagement, and that's just something that can't happen with Chris. You got to keep him in the loop, keep him engaged. And I understand Cal mentioned that specifically after the game, said, yeah, that is something that I have to work toward and make sure he knows what his role is here. Because right now, you couldn't flat out tell me what is Chris Livingston on this team right now. You cannot tell me what his role is. You can't tell me what he provides to this team. Cal says it's rebounding and you know, effort and things like that, but he had one rebound today, 2 points, 1 of 3 shooting, 1 foul, 1 turnover in 7 minutes. I mean, that's not
no. And how about the 2 points coming off an inbounds play?
And it was beautiful. And
did you notice there's been some different inbound situations and some looks to where they're trying some different things. And one there, I believe it was in the first half, they ran some action and they got Xavier the ball and he drove and ended up driving right into Onyenso. And I don't know exactly how that play was supposed to develop, but there was some screening going on. It looked like they were trying to get maybe a lob at the rim or something, a cross screen or some action there. So honestly, I got to give Cal some credit. A lot of the times they try to get the ball in and then they'll go right into some ball screen or some different action, some of their half court stuff, instead of actually trying to score in out of bounds situations. But I'm seeing some different stuff being ran in those situations now that I think, one, it puts more on the scouting report. It makes the opposing team's job a lot more difficult. You have to do anything, it takes preparation time away from other areas in these games. Just throw some stuff out there, whether you score off it or not. At least make them waste 15 to 20 minutes of practice time preparing for something else.
Yeah. Throwing the arm up to Jacob Toppin, whoever your four is. I mean, PJ Washington, since even before that, but to PJ.
You go back to Terrence Jones.
Yeah.
You go back to Terrence Jones, and I'm telling you, they've been running the same stuff for years. And no coach, I'm willing to bet, no coach goes over inbounds under the basket inbound situations against Kentucky. Nobody goes over it because you don't have to defend it.
I mean, there is nothing to defend outside of can we find somebody that can have an outstretched arm further than whatever our power forward is.
Yeah.
That was
a breath of fresh air. I really did.
It very much was. How about Antonio Reeves kind of exploding in a name brand?
Big game.
We've seen him go up against School of the Blind, North Institute of Technology several times, but we have not seen him score like this against meaningful competition. Very refreshing to see him go for 11 points, hit three threes in the first half, really kind of ignited things for the Cats in the first half, quite a bit, finished 4 of 9 shooting overall, 3 for 4 from three, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. He did have 3 turnovers that needs to get cleaned up, but in 26 minutes, he definitely stepped up. Still waiting to see CJ Frederick do that. He had 3 points. His three touched every part of the rim before falling in. I did like, though, that the bench exploded when that ball fell. CJ needs that confidence. He's in a little rut himself. He needs a confidence boost because you don't want to see him kind of, phase out, because he is such a valuable asset to this team. And I know, there are some Kentucky fans droning on going, oh, he was so overrated as a player coming in here. We shouldn't, fool's gold this. Like, no, he's a 47% career three-point shooter for a reason. He has a role on this team, and he's going to be a very, very, very valuable asset. We just got to see him start making shots and build that confidence back up. So I like that one fell for him, but it was not enough in 15 minutes of play.
It wasn't, and that's another thing that I looked at today was the minutes and how those minutes played out. Reeves played, I think, 11 more minutes than he did. Did he get the 26 minutes? I'm not sure. I've had it pulled up a second ago.
Reeves got 26.
26, and CJ got 15, and then the other two guards played 37, 36 minutes. So you're starting to see a rotation breakdown and how some minutes are going. And the thing with Reeves, and you mentioned that's a couple of games now, but that's the first big game where he's hit shots.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a step in the right direction, but you had the game a couple of weeks ago where he had the really good first half day before Thanksgiving against North Florida, and then didn't do anything the second half. He had a really good first half today. He didn't do anything in the second half. I think he had one bucket. I think that has to be more consistent across 40 minutes than over 20, because there's going to be games in SEC play where they're going to need him to knock down some shots in the first half, but you're also going to need him to knock some shots down in the second half. And one of those two, you're hoping both of them, but one of those two, Reeves, CJ, I think they have to emerge and be Kentucky's shot guy. And the guy that stretches you out and hits threes consistently and you can run some action for. And I think that's where I come back to CJ. I don't want CJ to be the guy that just kind of makes plays off of other guys.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to use his ability to hit the three to put teams in some bonds defensively, run him off some of that floppy action along the baseline, and at least put teams in a predicament to where there's some miscommunication can possibly happen. I mean, you're talking about a guy that you got to step 3 or 4 feet down onto the three-point line. You might get some slips for Oscar Tshiebwe at the rim. You may get a switch and then get an advantage with Oscar in the post. Like, that's where I think that there needs to be a little bit of an adjustment. let Oscar set some screens for these guys, because if you want to switch it, you're getting a big on a guard in the post. If not, you get hung up with one of the strongest guys in college basketball, probably one of the best screeners in college basketball, and you get an open look. Like, that would be, I think that would be one of the adjustments that I make. I still think that when you get late in games in SEC play, I think you're going to see a lot of middle ball screen with Cason Wallace and Oscar Tshiebwe, who I think is Kentucky's two best players. And I think that that's going to put teams in some situations to where you could have some breakdowns defensively. And I thought Cason, honestly, we talk about the shot he hit late that ultimately won the game. I think one of the most encouraging things that I saw him do today was the first possession of the second half, where it was late in the shot clock. He made the floater and made a big play that Kentucky needed to get started. I thought that was the biggest one to me, because that was a play off the bounce in traffic, late in clock, going and getting your own.
Kid got some dog in him, man.
He's going to have a triple-double before the year's over, too.
He said that, too. I think after the game that he got close, what was he? He had 9 and 8 in one of those games on top of 15 or whatever it was. And he said that. He said, oh, there's only been 3 in Kentucky history. I'm going to go get me one.
Well, and you know, too, and one thing that I want to see from him, and I don't know if you've noticed it or not, but I think that we've talked a lot about his defense, and I think it's great in spots, but I think he's still leaving a lot to be desired, especially when it comes to off the ball defense. I've seen him get lost a couple of times, Jack, and I don't know if that is kind of just maybe losing attention to detail when it comes to the game. Freshman mistakes a little bit, but I think he has potential to be just as good off the ball defender as he is on the ball. But I think that maybe that's a thing where in high school you can kind of get away with some poor technique. And things that he makes
up for with his recovery speed
able to get away with at this level of basketball. So I think that's an area defensively, if you turn on the tape and watch him and go back and watch a game or two. And I think that there are some breakdowns happening there, but his instincts and everything, he's going to be okay. And I think
that's an area to think about. Isn't that just sick to think about, that he's as effective as he is on both ends right now? And just to think he's 8 games, like, it's so easy to kind of get carried away and go, oh, he's your best player, you got to, you know, run this for him and things. And then just kind of take a step back and go, oh, he's 8 games into his college basketball career and still going to make dumb mistakes that all freshmen make. And we still have potentially as many as 32 more games with this kid. Like, it's just so fascinating how
he's got the highest ceiling on this team.
Yeah.
From now till March.
And maybe the highest floor, which I think is the most.
Yes. And, you know, the other thing, too, that I like about him, his demeanor doesn't change. Nothing affects him. Like, his facial expressions, his body language, I don't see it change. Like, I see a guy that's not fazed by. To me, he's not a guy that buys into the 2 to 3 really good plays in a row. And he's not a guy that falls victim to the 2 or 3 bad plays in a row. Those are the guys you want on the floor in the NCAA tournament. Those are the guys that don't crack. And I think Kentucky has one. And does he have to get better at some stuff? Absolutely. But we're 8 games in. Today was a huge step in the right direction. I think a confidence booster for him. And I think when you get into SEC play, I think Kentucky's going to have one of the better guards in college basketball that mixes and does a lot of things well in a lot of different areas across the stat sheet.
Can't say I disagree. Let's get out of here with this. Head-to-head matchup, Oscar Tshiebwe and Hunter Dickinson. It's kind of one that everybody had circled on their calendars, early in one of these early seasons matchups. Oscar finished with 13 and 14, and then Hunter finished with 23 points, 9 rebounds, and a couple, 3 blocks. So, I think counting stats definitely favored Hunter, and he definitely took things over in the second half, had 15 points there. But, I still thought Oscar was effective. I think he did a lot of good things, found kind of the holes that he could and tried to impact the game the way he could in those given. I liked his baseline jump shot there in the second half. But I don't know. It just feels like something is off with Oscar, and I'm curious your thoughts on what you think of his play here through 8 games.
Something is definitely off, it feels like. And I mean, look, his numbers last year were just unreal, right? I mean, you're talking just ridiculous numbers. And I think that we've said this a couple of times that realistically, you probably expected a dip this year. I mean, we're still talking about a guy today that in 31 minutes goes for 13 points, 14 rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an all SEC performer with those numbers. But we've also seen Oscar Tshiebwe go for 26 and 18 and 27 and 15 against some of the best teams in college basketball. And maybe some of it is the time off there in October and still not maybe establishing a rhythm. I think that, too, you had a guy that hadn't fouled at all in the first half, and then he fouled back-to-back plays there late in the half, that you go from having zero fouls to two fouls, and I think you get in a situation the second half where you did have to sit him some because of another foul. I would have liked to have seen there with less than a minute to go when he got the first one that Cal just go ahead and play the last 45 without him and keep him at one.
Yeah.
That way you don't have the second foul, and then you can kind of just ride him the entire second half because he would have played – he probably wouldn't even come out second half. But he had to when he picked up the third and then ultimately picked up a fourth. But I don't know. I want to see when you get into league play. But I guess the thing that really stands out, though, is he's not had his normal numbers and his output, and I don't think the normal impact on the game that he had a year ago, and it's against teams that haven't played against him, whereas league coaches have played against him, and those scouting reports are going to, I think, honestly going to be tougher on him, Jack, because when you've got Rick Barnes, who's played three games against Oscar Tshiebwe, and you've got these other coaches in the league, yeah. Eric Musselman, who've done a lot of different things against not just Oscar Tshiebwe, but against Xavier Wheeler and things, I think that's going to be a challenge for Cal and this team is – when you get into the familiar territory of league play and these coaches all know these guys, and I mean, Xavier Wheeler has been in the league now 4 years. Like, every coach is going to know what they have to do to shut down Xavier Wheeler and what to do to kind of neutralize Oscar Tshiebwe to a level. And I think that's the term that I would use right now, is he's not doing out of this world things like we saw a year ago, but he's still doing things very, very well. And it's still enough that it won out today, but that's why I think Kentucky's going to be okay, because I still think that's inside there somewhere, and it might not come out until January.
And I think that's okay.
Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. I looked at some of the advanced numbers that he had, and his usage is really high right now. And, you know, he's still incredibly efficient as an offensive rebounder, defensive rebounder, and those numbers are totally normal. There is something to be said about his usage, and I think that – When the other guys start to step up, when you see CJ start finding his groove, when you see, you know, Kaysen kind of, finalize that status of him being kind of the go-to guy offensively, and even if it's Xavier or whoever it is, when those other options start to develop themselves, I think Oscar is going to be more of that magnet inside, the offensive rebounding magnet for the cleanup buckets and easy opportunity for scores that he was last season, rather than the go-to guy that you need him. And it kind of just caught me off guard. It was kind of frustrating after the Champions Classic game when Xavier Wheeler was asked, he was like, you know, do you feel like you're being relied on, that Oscar's being relied on too heavily right now? And he kind of got snippy with Kyle Tucker and was like, well, he's the National Player of the Year. Like, what's he supposed to be? Like, of course we're going to rely on him heavily. And it's like, well, no, we're not saying, are you relying on him heavily? We're saying, are you exclusively relying on him? Like, do you feel comfortable going to anybody else right now? And, you know, Xavier was kind of like, well, you know, we don't need to because he's Oscar. Like, it just kind of got short with him. And I just don't like that mentality right now. I do think that they need to, you know, figure that out and just kind of find themselves as basketball players before, going all in on Oscar and relying on him to kind of save the day every single time. So it is refreshing to have Kaysen Wallace save the day, to have Jacob Toppin emerge in the second half the way he did, to have Antonio explode in the first half, those type of things. You need those type of storylines. You need those type of momentum builders going into the year, and then let Oscar kind of find himself within the game. And I think that's going to be Kentucky at its best by the end of the season.
I do too. And I think that a year ago, this team, they peaked in late January, early February after they beat Kansas and beat Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing I'll say about this. Like they're struggling. They're not struggling mightily. I know they hadn't won the two key games. They're not playing their best basketball. We saw them really hit their stride late December. Jack, this may sound crazy. I'm okay if they don't hit their stride till late January.
Yeah.
As long as they find ways to win games, I think if you're a Kentucky fan, I don't think you want this team to look good right now because it has veterans. It's older. And the thing about veteran teams is they kind of peak and then it gets here and then you're like, okay, can you get to another level? The difference this year is I think they got a guy in Kaysen that can go this way. If they can find whatever that role is for Chris, I think that you got another guy. But look at North Carolina right now. Everybody thought North Carolina was just going to be penciled in to be a national champion and a Final Four team, and they're struggling to win basketball games. And you're talking a team – four straight losses. Now you're talking about a team that should probably be out of the top 25.
Mm-hmm.
But four straight.
Number one to outside of the top 25 in the span
in a week. Weeks.
Yeah, week.
Yeah,
week
from Thanksgiving till now. So things could absolutely be worse. The sky's falling in Chapel Hill right now.
Mm.
It's not falling in Lexington yet. And I think today was one of those things where it's not going to be enough to get fans like, all right, this is a national championship team. But I think it was a step in the right direction for the first time that I think fans probably lay their head down tonight and say, okay, it feels like basketball season. And I think that that's a good thing. And the fact that Louisville can't win a basketball game and starting to wonder if they'll even win a basketball game.
Are you starting to feel bad for them? Because I'm not. I
no. Don't know.
I just – it's kind of one of those they made that bed by building that roster and – We said it, like we called that from day one. I'm like, they don't have a point guard on the roster outside of L. Ellis, and he's a selfish me first point guard, score first point guard. That's a recipe for failure. Any team in college basketball, doesn't matter, rivalry, who's coaching that team. I mean, it just made no sense from the beginning. So it is what it is.
Let's put it how it is. They dodged that game last year. Can't dodge this one. And I know that the Music City Bowl and everything's going to be going on at the exact same time. And I know that's unfortunate. This isn't the first time that we've had – well, the first time we've had it the exact same time. But you and I in Starkville a couple years ago, I mean, this is kind of becoming a New Year's Eve or New Year's Day thing mm-hmm. here with Kentucky playing a basketball game the exact same time the football team's playing or a couple hours apart. But people are going to be invested in that game against Louisville. It's not going to be a marquee win if Kentucky gets it. I mean, you're talking about a team that's 204, 205 in KenPom right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still Louisville, and you still want to beat the crap out of them. So it's one of those things that Kentucky, it'll be a feel-good day. But it's not doing anything to your resume. And now it's beat UCLA. Add that to your resume. Get some wins in league play, and then go all in on that trip to that game against Kansas at Rupp Arena. How about this too? We haven't got to talk about this. The ACC-SEC challenge being
going to be fun.
Together. We're going to see you know this. I know people are thinking just because it's champions, that Kentucky, Duke, and stuff, or CBS, Kentucky, North Carolina. If Kentucky's playing Carolina and CBS, I'm willing to bet Kentucky's going to be playing Duke in the ACC-SEC challenge. In the years Kentucky's playing Duke, they'll be playing Carolina. That is how it's going to be every single time. Then maybe we'll mix in Virginia here and there.
That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
It will be, but it's going to be. But we're going to get Kentucky at Cameron Indoor and Kentucky-Duke at Rupp Arena at some point, probably in the next couple of years. So you could have a schedule here in a couple of years that includes, if the cards and everything plays out right, you could have a North Carolina, a Duke, and a Gonzaga all on your schedule in the same year. That non-conference schedule starts to look a little better, right?
It's going to be a lot of fun. I, for one, am looking forward to that. Sean, let's get out of here. It's been a good show. Nice little wrap up. I'm glad we got to get back to doing these post-game shows. We got to do it for all of them. I really had a lot of fun with this. So
yeah, for sure.
We'll get back to doing it for the next one. Let's get out of here. Where can fans find your work?
You can find my work at gobigbluecountry.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry.
Find me on Twitter at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Reach out to me via email, jpilgrim@kentuckysportsradio.com. With that, we'll be back next time for the Jam Pack Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.